Well, I think we've gotten to a point now where, and I guess I'm proud to see it, and because I know of your part in the formation of it indirectly. I mean, I never knew quite as much as you told me today, but I did know that, and that, of course, made me very proud. But then I guess I look at these people now, and I see, well, they have dignity. Mm-hmm. They have dignity, and I think this is the difference in the generation before you and me. And then, to some extent, it's different in our generation, because there are a lot of our people who didn't get dignity, and there's some of them who don't have it yet. And I think this is the one great contribution you make. Because once you give them dignity, then they're not going to stand for a lot of stuff.
That's right. I remember one of the key issues was this. I was concerned in 70. Mm-hmm. I had to say we were negotiating with Commodore. You know, we just had a roadblock and mm-hmm. an impact. Mm-hmm. So we were waiting to hear from the university. And I had sent a letter to the university and told them, if we, I went into a meeting on Sunday, mm-hmm. and the members wanted to strike. They wanted to strike, not come to work the next morning. And I stood up and I told them no. I said, it don't take no guts not to come to work, and management don't think you mean it, and they don't believe we mean what we're going to do. I said, now, what I want you to do is sit up there and vote that at noon tomorrow, you walk off them jobs and meet me over there by the water tower. Unless you hear from me. Then I sent a telegram to hand delivered, or not a telegram, a letter delivered to the office telling them that they had until noon to respond to and agree to our position on these items. I'm only 4 or 5 of them. Didn't hear nothing from them. So I went over and stood on him. I'm nervous as hell. Are these people going to do what they're supposed to do or what? I'm telling you. Based on my work, so the best sight I saw them people walking up from the kitchens and the campus and coming across that campus, old women and young, can't hardly walk, but they were peeling over there and they gathered over there in that, between the water tower and the drugstore, right out in that area. They gathered over there, and right then they were sent out to their picket spots. And we only had 3 people out of all them unions, out of all them people, 360-some people that stayed on the job.
All 3 people.
It was the most beautiful sight I ever. It was worth all that I'd gone through to see them people come over there and stand over there. Wow. And then, of course, immediately the university sought an injunction.
Yeah.
And that didn't bother. So we went on up there in front of Judge Ager, and our lawyer said, well, you know, he told us, you know, it's against the law. He said, but I can stall them off. I'll ask for the books. He said, I can stall them off for a whole bunch of days. And if they don't want to act right, if he thinks about giving them an injunction. And we had one of the best, well, the best labor lawyer in the state, Abe Zwirling, out of Detroit. And he knew his business. So we went up there, and the judge told us to... Well, he was going to send us down to Detroit to the State Labor Mediation Board to negotiate and see if we can come up with a solution to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the university officials he didn't want that university closed. He wanted that woman. And so we went down there and negotiated. The best God, when we were down there negotiating, they sent them kids home about that Thursday. So we came back. They wasn't moving. And I told the mediator down, I said, look, as a matter of fact, one of the men on our negotiating team threatened to throw, I don't know whether it was Hauser or Bill Smart, threatened me up there on the 10th, 12th floor. He threatened to throw him out the damn window. And they were going at it hot and heavy. I got up and out of the room. I told him, I said, look, they're not moving. And I said, they've even backed off on some of the stuff they said before. He says, I know it. So he called it off. So we went back to court. The judge said, he was told, he says, I've been informed what you said. He said, so now ain't nobody leaving here. He said, I want the union to go over here into this room. And I want the university officials to go into this room. Well, this is Judge Agar up there. And we started negotiation all that afternoon, the evening, through the night. He kept going back and forth. And I'm proud to say that he had told he'd come back to us to get us to change. And it wasn't so much that we were wrong, he knew they were wrong. Mm. And what we was asking wasn't out of line. Mm. So he said, well, what is your last effort to resolve this? He said, now, you tell me what you want, and I'll go in there, and I'm sure that they will accept it, or I'll have everyone in Regents up there in the jail. Now, that's what he told him, just like that. President and everything, he nothing but these. So he must have went back and told them, because they kind of finally come to agreement. We come to agreement about 5:30 in the morning. And so the judge says, well, when do we have this ratification meeting? I said, well, I don't know how we can get word to the people. We'll get word to the people. And said, have them up here. So they came, I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning. There were too many of them to get in one courtroom. He had two courtrooms. So I didn't know this loudspeaker was on. And I had to go and explain it to one group of our members, and it was transmitted over. It was just here in this room, but there was a loudspeaker on, and I walked into the meeting. I said, well, here comes the judge. And they busted out, and I didn't know any guy could hear it. So I went through all of this stuff and told them, and I had to go into another room and do it with them all over again. And we got the thing ratified. Matter of fact, the afternoon shift was called back to work that afternoon. Now, here they done sent those kids home on Thursday. Right after they did, we agreed to this contract, and it was just a plain mess.
Well, the university didn't have the skill then that it has now, I think.
Well, they should have had it, though, because we
should have had it. Yes.
That was in 70. Now, we've been in negotiations. This is the same people.
But they weren't taking it serious.
No.
You see, that's it. You see, now
they didn't believe that we were going straight.
Yeah. Well, see, now they take it serious.
You see, and our people wasn't out there. You see, Monday, they was off the picket lines they were through by Thursday night. Mm-hmm. We said, well, Thursday or Friday morning when we agreed to it, we pulled in the picket line. Now, they were only out there a short time because they'd always taught me that make sure you got your facts straight so you can. The people out there is the shortest time possible.
Yeah.
See, so it was just due to their stubbornness that the people were out there as long as they were.
They do a pretty good job of training you, don't they?
Of what?
Absolutely. They do a pretty good job of training that leadership.
Education is our is the main theme that we bear down on, especially the leadership of the union. It's there if you can get involved and get them to vote to it. And I only have one problem with it. A lot of the teaching of the leadership is done through these labor schools at the different universities. Well, you know there that the same people that are teaching us are teaching them. And I'm a stickler that they ought to be training to teach them the things that they should. Now, the university can teach them fundamentals, basic school training, but they can't teach you the stuff that you run into out here. It's the same thing of a kid going and getting his diploma. In school. He got his diplomas, give him the background and the basics to go out here and do a job.
But he still got to learn the job.
That's right. This is what Gary Hawks asked me once when Wayne Douglas was put in there. He said, Floyd, how's Wayne doing? Well, I said, he's not too bad, but Hawks, the problem I've got with him is that they slapped that diploma in his hand and he couldn't learn it. See, I said, he couldn't learn it. I said, now, you know, and Gary will tell you today that I showed him a lot of things. He learned a lot of things from me to improve himself. But Douglas' mind was closed to learning anything because he kept bulldozing right into the same problem every time he turned around. And he'd get upset and get mad and lose his cool. Just like him and, what's his name, been up there? Affirmative Action.
Yeah, Affirmative Action, man. Yeah. He loses his cool.
Yeah. So consequently, I have no regrets.
All that is your great contribution.
And don't forget this one. The greatest contribution, as I was going to tell you when she came in the room, was her contribution. Her firmness, her strength behind it, and the sacrifices that she had to make. Me going here, going there to this thing, and a lot of these educational things, she went with me. And as I said, as I began to say, each year that I was going to run for office, I said, now look, you know, there ain't nobody to do it. And I know it's hard on you to think, but can we stand it one more year? And she would agree without that much of a problem. And that's what, she's the one that made it all possible. There ain't no doubt about that. Because I can't emphasize that part of it too much. You know her. She's kind of quiet. Yeah. But she's got a...
She's got a strength.
That's right. Strength. That's what's there.
She's strength that all of us need back there.
Yeah, that's right. That was the whole thing in a nutshell, because she'd hear people talking about me out there. And she'd, and I tell her, look, don't pay attention to them. Don't get involved with them, any kind of discord with them, because for everyone that's saying this, there's 50 of them out there that's saying something just the opposite. So just don't worry about it.
It's interesting how wives are. My wife. I want to ask you one thing I've gotten from anybody. Where'd you get your place over on the lake? Was that something that you bought?
Geraldine's uncle owned it over there. And, you know, I didn't know him about exactly.
Nice place.
He had lived in Detroit.
So
he had the land and stuff over there. So we started getting involved. My dad and that one end of the house there, my dad and I put that on the back, and Daddy was just getting to where he was enjoying the thing when he died. My dad only lived about 11 months or so after he retired. And so we were over there doing the work and taking care of the place and all that, and Tacky had two daughters, but they didn't mind him. So then he took sick, come down with cancer, and we brought him out here and took care of him. But he was a loner. He was a member of the Musicians Federation, a drummer for over 50 years.
He used to have a band or something here, public band, didn't he? Marching band? Was he?
Oh, yeah. No, he wasn't involved with that. No. So he, coming up and being up in Detroit, and he just didn't trust people.
Yeah.
It was a long time before he even trusted us, but it began to dawn on him. And he wanted that place kept for his friends and so people could come up there and enjoy themselves. So he will turn deed into things before he died. We went up to him, took us up to Blenheim, and he deeded the place over to us. Of course, I put money and stuff into it and work and all that stuff, just a matter of things. So that's how we really got ownership of it, but we were fooling around for a good 10 years before that.
Now, let's shift for just a minute. I want to ask you something else. Back around 1940s, there were a lot of you people who were involved in some political activity. Were you involved in any of that? As he had Seymour was elected to the council.
Oh, yeah, but I never got involved politically.
Washington was elected to the school board and all that kind of thing. And then, of course, next thing you knew, after you got on that, next thing you had was John Burton becoming mayor.
Well, they get interested in stories.
Yeah, that's what we've been getting interested in. We just
she talked about her stories.
Oh, I see your story. Well, we've been getting interested in real stories. You get that? We talking about real.
This story makes you come home every night to look at
I never have gotten into something, I might get into it. I get into it sometimes and such things as that. Roots. I rushed home every night to see that.
You say you'd want to get your hair done.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with you. It isn't like it is now. There was a closeness.
That's right.
Now there's a... Yeah, I read that thing.
Don't tell me to move again. I want to just... This guy here.
Oh, this looks familiar.
It was Ben Turpin
you always talk about. Oh, Ben Turpin. Ben used to back our baseball team. Yeah. I used to play Ben. Well, his team in Detroit used to come out here to play us.
Yeah.
And we used to run back to Detroit with their tails between their legs. Old Ben would come out here with his head, a gun on this hip and a gun on this hip, like the Ben was tough. And he didn't need no police for him. Ben walked down the street just like the one we had here. What was his name? He got in all that trouble. We had a policeman here that used to do that. He used to keep that little guy off the street.
He was that rough as a Ben is.
Well, I decided that just about every police had a Ben. Now, we had a Ben Taylor in Kansas City. And he was just like this.
and he would beat the ghost in every Saturday. And, I mean, it had to do to his visual language. And you had a joke for him, though. And that was... Everything they said is bad about him.
But anything good.
Well, and a good thing I'm picking up on here, you played baseball, too. Did you play with Fred Grady?
No, I played with John Burton.
I guess Fred Grady was a little ahead of you, because he's been...
Well, I don't think so.
Fred's been retired now 11 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I played with it. I played with Fred near the tail end of it. I've seen him play.
Fred Grady?
Yeah.
I know you play with Fred Knox.
No, well, Grady was just as I got into it. He was leaving it.
All right.
And then, you know, there's my dad and Milford Starks and Harry Starks. They all played with my dad.
I was going to say, name the guys that you played baseball with.
Jimmy Wilson, Burton.
Richard Denard, man. I remember Richard Denard. He was one of the...
I've seen the name. Richard
Denard. Richard a councilman of man I heard one time?
I think
so. Politics. I think he was.
So.
What was the one that died?
J.W. Anderson, Leo Anderson,
Hood
Perry.
Did the guy in Ann Arbor that died play
with... Wally Franklin.
Wally Franklin.
Yeah, yeah. What's this guy...
Gray,
Chester Gray.
What's that guy that lives over there in Monroe?
Sylvester Coleman.
Yeah, another one.
Oh, what a darn it. The one I can see right in my mind's eye.
He lives over there in Monroe, doesn't he? Your mother used to take care of these children here.
And you all used to play different teams around, and
yeah, I played some semi-pro ball, mm-hmm. And we used to go. We played for they had a team called the Toledo Cubs. Our name here was the Ypsilanti Cubs. We played for Ypsilanti. It was the Ypsilanti Cubs, and we would go over to Toledo and play as the Toledo Cubs. We even had part of a team out of Detroit. Some players come out of Detroit and call it the Detroit Cubs. So I went all over.
Who were you sponsored by?
Well,
who were you sponsored by?
In the city, we more or less sponsored ourselves.
Yeah.
And Lawrence Crosby.
Yeah, and Lawrence Crosby. That was another good one. He took us all over. We'd go to Canada, play, go practically everywhere. Then in the semi-pro ball, what this guy's name, we used to play in parks run by Gus Greenlee from Pennsylvania. He had all of these big league parks tied up.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'd go out and play different things. We'd have the Zulu Giants come here and play a game over here at the university. And we had just one heck of a ball team as far as this goes. We didn't give anybody some competition. And they were mostly Ypsilanti boys.
Did you ever play tennis in Monarchs?
Yeah. We played an exhibition game when... Jesse Owens is out racing a horse around over in Toledo.
I remember
he
that.
He raced that horse around and beat him. I batted against Satchel Paige and I ain't seen the ball yet. Throw that ball up behind that big foot and look like a pea. we couldn't get into big league.
Yeah.
Johnny Bass, we've had some, Jimmy Wilson, Jimmy's dead now. They're all, all good ball players.
Put Perry played in that.
Yeah, Put played third base, Put Perry. He's over there on First Avenue, stuff now.
I think of that other guy's name.
It's not Swan. Oh, there was another one, Harvey Fan.
Is that F.A. in it?
Mm-hmm. He was, Harvey was a fighter at one time. His brother was a fighter.
Oh, yeah.
But Harvey was a heck of a ball. But Clyde Vick.
Oh, did Clyde Vick?
You could play ball and have him, and he could only be the one man in the outfield and cover every bit of that ground until he could move. Jack was a pitcher. Jack Williams was a pitcher. Jack Williams would throw what I call a heavy ball.
he would throw a ball to it and almost knock it down. It felt like he still had a hold of it. When, you know, some people would throw a feather ball or a slate or something, but he throw something, oh, it was heavy.
Well,
now this town has had some pretty good ones, that ball team. And these people followed it.
Yeah.
We'd go to Canada and play a game in Chatham in the morning, best team up there, going crazy. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go to the old 1st of August celebration over at Buxton.
Oh, yeah.
And play the game there during the evening and during the afternoon during the celebration.
I think I have gotten the basics of everything, of what I wanted from you, Flick. The